Michigan. The DeVos family and their allies have already paid more than $1 million into political action committees which have paid for adverts supporting Tudor Dixon, according to the Detroit Free Press. Trump supporters also expressed their anger at the endorsement of Tudor Dixon on Twitter. "I don't like who President Trump endorsed for governor of Michigan. Tudor Dixon is a rhino and is paid off by DeVos. I will be voting for Ryan Kelly for governor of Michigan," tweeted user Lisa11947. Another Twitter user wrote, "Donald Trump did technically say the other night that he's a politician now. I'm curious if he meant he's part of the Washington swamp. Taking the DeVos money for Tudor Dixon says to me that he is." In response to a question on Twitter if people trust Donald Trump, another Twitter user said, "I'm not sure after he endorsed Tudor Dixon in Michigan and never Trump a candidate." In his endorsement statement, Donald Trump said when he first met Tudor Dixon, she was not well known, but I could tell she had something very special. She delivered a powerful speech on how she would lead Michigan, fight for election integrity, turn around the economy, and protect the future of Michigan for every child, Trump added. Then, after recognizing her during my rally speech in April, her campaign took off like a rocket ship. The great people of Michigan got it, just like I did. In a tweet after acknowledging the statement, Tudor Dixon said, "I'm honored to have President Trump's endorsement. We will unite Michigan and defeat Gretchen Whitmer." Meanwhile, opinion polls show the GOP contender, Tudor Dixon, faces an uphill battle if she wins the midterm primary on Tuesday, 2nd of August. Tudor Dixon has been the leading candidate in the Michigan GOP primary for governor, but in the crowded field, the conservative commentator has failed to garner even 30% support in any of the recent surveys carried out in the state. However, the Republican hopeful maintains an average lead of 7 percentage points over her GOP rivals, according to Rear Clear Politics analysis. If ultimately selected by Republican Michiganders on Tuesday, 2nd of August, Dixon will challenge Gretchen Whitmer, who is finishing out her first term as governor. Recent opinion polls suggest the Democrat is well positioned to win re-election, but analysts predict that the race will likely be competitive in a state that Donald Trump won in 2016 before President Joe Biden won there in 2020. The most recent survey was conducted by Glenn Gariff Group for the Detroit News from 5th to 8th of July, showing the incumbent Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer ahead of Tudor Dixon by just 10 percentage points. Gretchen Whitmer was supported by 50.7% of likely Michigan voters, compared to just 40.3% who backed Tudor Dixon.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners, my very dear sisters. Welcome to Muslim Lady. The month of Muharram is already there, so I offer my condolences to every single one of you, and of course Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, in order to broaden your insight. So today, since it is Muharram, we are going to have some discussion upon the women who participated in this story that created Muharram, actually. This is Asma, your humble host, and here with me I have my very dear sister, Sister Sadiqah. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome to Muslim Lady.
Wa alaikum salam, and thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Of course, I'm in here. Okay, dear ladies, today we are going to talk about the role of women in the battlefield of Karbala and in the journey of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in his way to teach us the truth of Islam that has been so much deviated from its true path. And also, we are going to look at the very comparison between the mother and the daughter and what they shared and contributed to the improvement, or just let's say to help the imam of their time. So, sister, let's just start with the role of Lady Zainab in the journey of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So in the previous session, we talked a lot about the fact that women were carried with Imam in order to be the witness of this incident, of this great event that happened in the history of Islam, and also in order for them to be the narrator of this history. And then we got to the point that Lady Zainab in Damascus, she had some lectures and sermons that affected many people and enlightened them as well, and actually led to the downfall of Bani Umayyah. Now, shall we just continue on that point?
So, Lady Zainab, as we know, is the daughter of Imam Ali and Hazrat Fatima, and she's also the sister of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Mm-hmm. So, Lady Zainab alayhi salam, from a very young age, she saw what her mother Hazrat Fatima had to do to protect the wilayah of Imam Ali alayhi salam, or in other terms, the imamate of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, according to history, there was an oath of allegiance that was taken on the day of Ghadir. But then as soon as the Prophet died, there were a few individuals who took the caliphate and they denied Imam Ali alayhi salam the caliphate.
Yeah.
So Hazrat Fatima alayhi salam, in that instance, she drew on all the political situation of the time, and she goes into the court of the caliph at that time, which was the masjid, which was the mosque. Yeah. Right? The mosque of the Prophet was a place where all the important matters used to take place. Now, according to one of the authors, I believe his name is Shahid Baqir al-Sadr. He's written a very interesting book looking into this specific event.
Who actually was an Islamic scholar.
He's an Islamic scholar, and he's not Shahid because he was killed in a very brutal manner because of his Islamic views.
Yeah.
And he was killed by Saddam Hussein, I believe.
Yes, and he was a very important figure.
Very important figure who's written many, many great books that are still studied. So when he looks at this event, he says Hazrat Fatima walked. Her house was actually connected to the mosque.
Yeah.
Her door was open into the mosque.
The Prophet made it that way.
Yes, according to the verse of the Quran.
Yes, according
But what she does is that day, she doesn't go from her house into the mosque. She takes another route. She walks out from the other door into the main road and then enters from another mosque to collect attention of the people. She doesn't go alone. She goes with a group of women who protect her.
Thank you.
Okay, dear audience, welcome back to Muslim Lady. We're talking about the whole story of Karbala and the role of women in participating in this battlefield.
She goes into the court in front of the caliph and delivers a whole sermon. And it's a very long sermon. It's a,
It had a great message, actually.
Exactly. It's a very long sermon that looks at the different Islamic principles. But when we come to the crux of it, she draws on the political time. She talks to them about how her husband had been chosen and what different services he had given to Islam, because these people had drawn on the caliphate on the basis that they had migrated with the Prophet, therefore they were very close to the Prophet, therefore they deserved to be Prophet. Therefore they deserved to have caliphate. So drawing on that same argument of theirs, she says, well, my husband has more virtues, right? Now, apart from this sermon only, she had other roles as well in the advancing the imamate of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Yes.
So we know that in the night for 40 days...
And actually in shedding light on the truth.
Exactly. So we know that, according to history, we know that up to 40 days she went to the houses of the companions with her husband and her two sons and asked them, did you not give the oath of allegiance on the day of Ghadir? Why have you turned back? And these people, like we mentioned, the people of Kufa, there's a similarity. They deny it. They say, if you would have come to us before the other caliph, we would have given you the oath of allegiance, but we've already given it to someone else. So they're turning back on the oath of allegiance. Now we compare it to Kufa. They write letters to Imam Hussein, and then they turn back and say, but we didn't write any letters to you. What are you saying?
Yeah.
Right? So understanding the political circumstance was so important. You see, women are often understood as people who have to have household chores, take care of children. Yes, please do take care of your child. The child needs to be nurtured by you. But don't forget that you need to understand, because when it comes to the imam, there is no man and woman.
Exactly, yes.
You have an equal role in defending the imam. You might not need to go to the battlefield, but if it comes to supporting him with your tongue and your work, you have to do it.
And maybe they could even enlighten their husbands.
Exactly. And this is what Hazrat Fatima did. This was a very good point you mentioned. When she was on her deathbed, the women of Medina come to her and she delivers another sermon to them, explaining to them that what their husbands have done is wrong. It's a very nice sermon. Everything is available. There's actually a book that's been translated into English, Lady Fatima from Cradle to Grave, available in English. It's been translated by Sheikh Tahir Ridha Jafar as well. So if anyone wants to Google it, it's available in PDF. I have checked it as well. And it has all these sermons inside it.
Thank you for sharing that.
So she talks to these women. Now, these women were not aware of the political circumstances. So when they hear this sermon of Hazrat Fatima, they go back and they beat their husbands up over it. Why did you leave the daughter of the Prophet?
Yeah.
So the role of the woman here. Now, let's go to Karbala.
Exactly.
Hazrat Zainab, she's seen everything, right? She's seen how her mother has been able. So there's a book that's written by...
Now, so as the mother is the daughter.
The daughter. She continues what her mother started in defending imamate.
Yeah, and she finishes that.
She finishes it. Now, there's a book written by Anita Rai.
Yeah.
She's an author. She's written many novels, but towards the last few years that I have been following her, she's written a lot of historical books about the life of the Prophet. But there is one book that she's written, The Essential Woman, that compares Hazrat Zainab and Hazrat Fatima. And here she tries to compare the role of these two great women and how they complement each other, and how the daughter took on a lot from the mother in defending imamate. Like when Hazrat Fatima was in the mosque defending the imamate of Imam Ali alayhi salam, she proves to them, and in the other historical instances, we're like going to the houses of the companions and asking them why they withdrew the oath of allegiance from Imam Ali alayhi salam, thus invalidating the caliphate that had taken seat.
Yeah.
Hazrat Zainab goes into the court of Yazid and she refers to him as Tulaqa. And she tells them, Antum Tulaqa, you are those people who were freed by my grandfather and you have no right to his seat in caliphate.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Okay,
go back to history, in the when the conquest of Mecca happened, those who did not accept Islam up till that day, they were, in other terms, freed by the Prophet. They were told that they will not, their blood will not be shed. They're free to live by the Muslims. Yeah. They accepted Islam because the Prophet was the Caliph at the time. He did have governorship over that time. It was agreed that these people who were freed on the day of the conquest of Mecca would not be allowed to take caliphate ever. One of those who was freed was Muawiyah, the father of Yazid. Yeah. Muawiyah still did go on to take on caliphate, but Yazid did go as
and
well.
And she makes that clear for
she
people.
She makes it very clear for the people over there that you have no right, Yazid, you have no right to take the seat because you are those people who are freed by my grandfather. Yeah. And by the law that we had established and everyone had agreed to, your caliphate is invalid. Mm-hmm. Based on what has happened in the past, because you exactly. people are the ones who fought against the Muslims while you're now residing over the Muslims. Mm-hmm. How does that make sense?
So now we can see that as a woman, she becomes the leader of this journey.
Exactly.
She starts to lead everyone to be the one who brings enlightenment to people's head.
Yes. Then when we see how Hazrat Fatima defended Imam Ali alayhi salam, we know that the door was struck on her. We know that she was whipped when she was holding onto his cloth when they were trying to drag him away. Now we go to Karbala. Imam Hussein is in his last breaths. He's in the state of sajda. Shimmer is there. He's going to kill him. Hazrat Zainab runs out of her tent. And she addresses one of the army leaders. I believe his name was Ubaidullah. And he actually did not want to come to the war. Yeah. He had tried ways to find, but it was his love for wealth and his love for leadership that brought him there. And she tells him, are you going to stand there while the son of the Prophet is being killed?
That's very sorrowful.
And she goes over there and she tries to protect him. And they whip her before Imam Hussein realizes, because, you know, he's in his last breath. He has not had water. He's very... According to some, he's moving in and out of consciousness, according to some. And that she goes to try and defend him. And when he regains consciousness, he tells us to go back. So Hazrat Fatima in Medina was defending Imam Ali. Hazrat Zainab seen the role of her mother in Medina.
Yeah.
And she assumes the same role when it goes to defending the Imam of her time. And we see throughout her journey from Karbala to Damascus and back to Medina, she was defending the next Imam. And inshallah, that can be discussed at a later.
Yeah, and also we saw that the role of a mother in Islamic heritage is that she would nurture kids like her.
Exactly.
So that they would lead the entire journey.
And this is what Hazrat Fatima did perfectly.
Exactly, yeah. Thank you, sister. We used all the information you shared with us. Thank you for that. And thank you for mentioning the name of the books. And thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell.
Who is the love one?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity.
La ilaha illallah.
Muhammadur Rasulullah.
Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger, so Allah is our return.
the Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends. How about beginning the day with a thought-provoking answer from Imam Hussein, peace upon him, when he was asked by a person to describe God Almighty? I can describe my Lord with the very words he has used to describe himself. He's never recognized by the five senses, never could be compared to man, very close but not to the point of being touched, very far but not so far that he can't be detected. He's one and he cannot be partitioned or divided, known by his signs and described by his attributes. There is no God but he, the great, the exalted.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
The chest fever in the southern Indian city of Chennai is on a peak as the 44th International Chess Olympiad kicks off there. Students created a mammoth chessboard on the playground and dressed up as 32 chess pieces to promote the game. For 2 weeks, Chennai is hosting nearly 2,000 players from 188 countries. For the first time in nearly 100 years of history of the Chess Olympiad, India is playing host. The event will run until August the 10th. Ahead of the game, 150 underprivileged children from various government schools were given the opportunity to fly. These were the students who won in a district-level chess tournament. A excited spectators gather at the Solberg Airport in the U.S. for the 39th New Jersey Lottery Festival of Ballooning.
We have about 45 balloons here today, including these spectacular special shapes. Our signature New Jersey Lottery Sunny Days balloon. You can see the tiger. Unicorn is hiding behind there. Tasmanian Devil, unique photo panda. We are having a spaceship. There's Billy the Kid. Spectacular presentation. You won't believe your skies this weekend.
Dozens of hot air balloons were test inflated in preparation for the real deal. The festival is considered the largest summertime event in New Jersey. Reddington City officials have predicted about 170,000 people will join the festival over the weekend. Weather forecasts say the sky are gentle enough for over 100 balloons to take flight in the morning and evening in mass ascents. And no one is more excited than the festival producer, who has been planning the event for months.
Including these spectacular special shapes. The balloons bring out the kid in everyone. You know, I've done this for a long time. This is the 39th annual one. But still, when I hear that propane whirring and these balloons going up, it makes the hair on my arm stand up.
The producer says these balloons will be handled by professional pilots and other balloons will be available for rides. The festival will last for 3 days, ending with food vendors, games, amusement rides, and other entertainment. There will also be a massive fireworks display as well as a nighttime feature of glowing balloons. The annual festival is the largest seasonal hot air balloon festival in North America. It draws in thousands of visitors every year.
You might think twice about throwing out your old trainers after this story. A startup in Tunisia breathes new life into old shoes as artists restore and even customize the footwear. The new business is called Kenenti and is located in the capital, Tunis. Here, the team uses fabrics, laces and leather recovered from various factories for the repair work. The creative artists work on every detail during each project, even the soles of the shoes. The work aims to find solutions to shoe waste and reuse items instead of adding them to the world's landfills. Cherif Zeroui is the co-founder of Kenenti. He says the idea came to him 2 years ago when he discovered the number of shoes thrown away each year in Tunisia.
In France, there were 100 million pairs of shoes thrown away every year. This is a huge figure for us and for the ecosystem and for the earth. In Tunisia, it's almost the same given the population. There were 3 or 4 million shoes thrown away every year. So we thought of giving added value to these shoes, so we restored them.
Zerbui also says he is happy to create jobs for those willing to participate regardless of the educational degree. Besides shoes, these artists dabble in restoring worn-out handbags, giving them a brand new look. Many of the artists and interns say they are proud to be part of this unique project. They say they feel like a family there. The startup is the first trainer restoration business to be launched in North America. Would you buy a pair of scrap tire sandals? Well, in the Vietnamese capital, Hanoi, you will find all kinds of handmade sandals from recycled tires. The famously rugged footwear of the Viet Cong have traveled vast distances over the decades. Shoemakers use sharp knives and chisels to craft a sandal from huge tires. For those seeking a nod to yesteryear, the hard-sole sandals are available at markets and small stores alike, with prices ranging from $2 to $1,000. The Vietnamese first began making rubber sandals in the late 1940s during the First Indochina War against the French, using tires from ambushed army trucks. They found the sandals were cheap to make and survive well in wet, muddy and hilly conditions. Even in peacetime, the design remains popular for sustainability reasons.
Living through a pandemic is strange, as we are often locked indoors, but a UK-based Indian mechanical engineer made the best use of his time during the coronavirus lockdown and built an airplane. 38-year-old Ashok Ali Serial, who is also a private pilot, had long dreamt of a personal aircraft. He initially planned to order an aircraft kit and built it with his colleagues. But he says the 2020 lockdown left him with no choice but to complete it on his own. Now he has an aircraft which he has named after his youngest daughter, Dia. The plane can carry up to 4 people, including the pilot, and fly about 250 kilometers an hour. After getting clearance to fly, he flew across 4 European countries with his friends. He has also gone on a trip with his family of 4.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed patch. Valeria tried to remove the tank, but ultimately, because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year. British paleontologists have made an exciting fossil discovery which has been identified as the earliest known animal predator.
It's quite a large fossil. It's the preserved part is at least 20 centimetres tall, and it would have lived attached to the seafloor bottom. But it's a broken specimen, so we actually don't know how large the entire colony is. This is only a fragment of it.
Wilby says the animal had a stalk and a cup on top with a little tentacles, which most likely used to catch a food out of the water. The ancient animal is related to sea anemones, jellyfish and corals, and pushes the known existence of these species back to 20 million years. Wilby explains the fossil displays a key point in the evolution of animal. The fossil is said to be around 560 million years old and was discovered in Charnwood Forest, northern England, amongst over 1,000 other fossils.
Summer heat is here, and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. Pyrenees Zoo, located in Wallonia in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water, and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool, so we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it.
Iran's city of Rafsanjan has hosted an international talent contest dubbed Stage Stars. The event is aimed at providing a chance for stage talents from across the world to come in the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali reports from Rafsanjan. Let's check it out.
This is a global stage for talents. The 5th International Stage Stars Festival wrapped up with the announcement of winners, who have been competing in 4 categories of singing, voice acting, show hosting, and sound impression. The top performances from each category won the golden mic and a cash prize.
The festival was a place for more serious competition between those who have a say in a stage performance. I'm so happy to be chosen by the jury as the best show host of the contest.
It was an amazing event for talents. I'm so glad to be part of this. Talents from all across Iran and many parts of the world competed in the festival, so winners should be proud of themselves.
Held in Iran's city of Rafsanjan, the 2-day event brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, and Turkey, to flaunt their neck for stage performance.
The scale of this contest is global. Many of us participants did not have any idea we could be stand-up comedians or show hosts. But when we got on stage here, we ourselves discovered our own talents.
I really love that, seeing that all people around the world are coming here and presenting themselves. It's a very great feeling. Of course, they will be progressed and they will develop yourself when they will got the result.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say the competition has been tough, and those who stood out are real stage stars.
We tried our best to pick talents who really acted like professionals on stage. Not only should they care about the standards and principles of a stage performance, but they must innovate, improvise, and stand out.
This festival acted like a university for stage talents. It taught a lot of lessons about the stage to participants, especially for those who failed to win the contest.
Organizers say this contest is not just about scouting for stage talents. They say the event helps shine a spotlight on talents and lead them to their community.
The 5th Stage Stars Festival is aimed at bringing stage talents to light. Many of the participants already have a few years of experience, so this stage is not supposed to discover them, but to springboard them to a higher level in their careers.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival.
To those who won the golden mic here, this is a dream come true. But they say, aside from the prize, Stage Stars has marked a milestone in their pursuit of success, since they have now come under the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
Through the same is the light of guidance and the shift of salvation.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Muharram presents today's special. Every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Salamun Alaikum. This is today's special. We're going to speak about the movement of Imam al-Hussein, peace be upon him. I invite you to listen to this episode of today's special. Accept our condolences on martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein, peace be upon him.
As-salamu alayka ya Sayyida Shuhada. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله.
Today, Thursday, is the 6th of Muharram, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 13th of Murdad, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 4th of August, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We open the Holy Quran, chapter Al-Fajr, verses 1-5.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
والفجر.
By the dawn.
وليال عشر.
And by the 10 nights.
والشفع والوتر.
And by the even number and the odd.
والليل إذا يسر.
And by the night when it passes.
هل في ذلك قسم لذي حجر.
Is there not in all that an oath sufficient for one of perception?
لا إله إلا الله لا إله
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The glitter of the light of Islam and Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, in the gloom of ignorance at that time is one of the examples of Fajr that means break of dawn. Also, the glitter of the break of dawn for the rise of Hazrat Mahdi, the 12th Imam, may Allah hasten his reappearance, when the world will be completely darkened by corruption and injustice, is considered to be another example of this. The rise of Imam al-Hussein on the bloody plains of Karbala is another example when he pulled back the black curtains of deceit, revealing the tyrannies of the Umayyads and unveiling the real face and nature of those devils.
On the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family and companions, be with today's special.
Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein.
Every day from IRIB English Radio.
People rise up and mourn. It is Ashura. See the struggle of Hussein in the Kabbalah.
From the 1st of Muharram till today, we have spoken about the movement of Imam al-Hussein. This is today's special from IRIB English Radio. I invite you to listen to the continuation of this program. There is a great likeness between Ibrahim alayhi salam, the beloved friend of God, and Hussein, the sacrifice of God. Allah made the hearts of people incline towards both of them. What we notice amongst those who gather for the remembrance of Hussein and establish his mourning is something truly amazing. Just as we see people who don't follow the sacred law throughout the year attracted to perform the Hajj, we see the same group showing a loyalty towards Hussein which is not in proportion to their nature. This shows us that there is divine control over the hearts, and it appears that the movement during these two seasons of Hajj and Muharram are an answer to the prayer of Ibrahim, of Prophet Ibrahim. The reason for loving the family of Prophet in their valley of martyrdom is no less than the reason for loving the family of Abraham, peace be upon him, in their valley of barrenness. Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
We were talking about bala, and we're talking about misfortunes, trials, and difficulties that we face in our lives and how we can overcome them. We said that when a person realizes that there is a purpose to this bala, that is the essence of the solution of how to deal with our calamities. That we know there is purpose and we know there is reward. Imagine if a person lived life and he didn't believe in God. He didn't believe in a wise creator. He didn't believe in a commanding Lord. And that all these different factors from the beginning, you know, when you're a baby, from being hungry and thirsty and being in pain, until when you become an adult and you have your own different trials and tribulations. You see that life is filled with such great pain, but you don't know where that pain is coming from and what is the purpose of it. Imagine how deep in darkness a person would be and how confused they would be and how weak a person would be. But on the other side, we have believers that they believe in Allah and they believe that when God brings for them trials and misfortunes, there is a purpose to it. And that purpose is to bring him closer to himself, to bring us closer to God. Then that person becomes very actually joyful, even in the face of trials and tribulations. He becomes even grateful. He becomes so spiritual that he realizes that everything from God, either if we see it as good or if we see it as bad, all of it is good for us because he is taking us towards himself and is removing us from the nafs, the desires, the ego, the greatest barrier between us and God. He is shattering that. Once that's shattered, we connect to God. We become very easily connected to God. يا حسين حسين حسين
يا حسين 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 Lessons of Muharram
يا حسين 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 يا حسين
I entitled this part Enjoining Good and Forbidding Evil. Why? One of the main social messages of Imam al-Hussein was fighting against people's ignorance, with the tyrants of the time blurring the lines between right and wrong. Imam al-Hussein vowed to sacrifice his life and the lives of his family and companions in order to enjoin good and forbid evil, which also shows his servitude to Allah. Indeed, he did. Following his death, there were uprisings of Ibn al-Zubayr and Mukhtar al-Thaqafi, which eventually led to the collapse of the Umayyad Caliphate. This teaches us to always enjoin good and forbid evil, even if it means sacrificing our own lives for the sake of Allah. Let's look at the golden words of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. In the book Tuhaf al-Ughul, we read that Imam al-Hussein states, "People are the servants of this mundane world. The religion is like nothing more than salvia, which runs off their tongues. As long as their livelihood is abundant, they are committed and protect their religion. But when they are tested by difficulties and problems, the truly religious are reduced to only a small number." At this point, Zuhair and Burair stood up one by one and announced their acceptance of and commitment to that eminent one. Hurr ibn Yazid accompanied that eminent one and did not separate his route from him, saying, "O Hussein, by God, I swear that if you fight, you will be killed." The eminent one, his answer to Hurr, said, "Are you trying to fight me with death? Do you think that if you kill me, all your problems will be solved? I surely will go. Death holds no shame for the chivalrous person."
Imam Ali alayhi salam in Sermon 192 in Nahj al-Balagha talks about this. It says, "But Allah tries his servants with various ordeals and obligates them with various forms of struggle and tests them with various dreads. So there's struggle, there are dreads, there are ordeals. But there's a purpose why Imam Ali says this. He says there's a purpose. إِخْرَاجًا لِتَكَبُّرْ مِنْ قُلُوبِهِمْ In order to eradicate vanity from their hearts, takabur and arrogance, the same attribute of Satan, to take the Satan away from us, to make us humble. وَإِسْكَانًا لِتَذَلُّلْ فِي نُفُوسِهِمْ To take away vanity from their hearts and instill humility in their souls. And that this may open the doors to his favor and the feasible means to his forgiveness. Allah is making us, instilling humility in us. Allah is taking away arrogance from us. And that is what the purpose of our life is, to be an abd. Don't we say in our salat, Ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh, that I bear witness that Prophet Muhammad is his slave first and then is his messenger. Being a slave of God is the greatest quality of our Prophet. And that is how we reach him and connect to him. Not by arrogance, not by doing whatever our nafs wants, because our nafs is our greatest enemy. By actually taking away ourselves from the nafs and the lower desires into just submission. As the traditions say, religion Islam is huwa taslim. The religion of Islam is nothing but submission to God. And this submission itself brings us so much power, gives us so much strength, gives us such great favors, that a person that becomes a true slave, a true servant of God, becomes the most powerful person, becomes the most able to manage their pains and difficulties, because they see themselves as a student of Imam Hussein. They see themselves, when trials and tribulations happen, they see themselves as being tested, and they want to pass this test, just how Imam Hussein alayhi salam passed his test and even amazed the angels with his patience. We want to pass this test. So in this Muharram, that we are understanding bala, this great bala that happened on Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we reflect on our own lives, and we say that we want to be able to, just like our Imam, just like our master Imam Hussein, dealt with his pains, we want to become like him. How did he deal with his pain? The solution is he was an abd. He understood that this bala is for a purpose, and that purpose is to increase him more in ubudiyat, in being a slave of God, in being humble in God, and to take away everything else besides God in his heart. Inshallah, in this Muharram, we can learn to become a greater servant of God, a greater slave of God. And this is the key to dealing with trials and tribulations and difficulties in our life.
Condolences to all Muslims all around the world. On the month of Muharram, when Imam Hussein alayhi salam was martyred in the land of Karbala. Dear friend, inshallah, we continue our discussion on the next episode of today's special. Until then, wassalamu alaikum.
ومماتي ممات محمد وآل محمد.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.